This is the Lombardi Line with Michael Lombardi and Patrick Maher on VSiN.
Okay, BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks. Visit BetMGM.com or download the BetMGM app. Of course, if you're in Vegas, bring your state-issued ID to any MGM property and you're ready to bet within minutes. Got to be 21 years or older, and if you have a gambling problem, it's 1-800-GAMBLER. We are proudly brought to you by BetMGM as we welcome you back here. Lombardi Line, he's Michael Lombardi, I'm Patrick Maher. We're going to bring in Vinny. Let's give a shout-out to Bill's sister-in-law, who rides with me when it comes to the Bond franchise, and Roger
Dina.
Moore.
Dina likes,
shout to Dina. Dina.
Yeah, she likes Roger Moore. And I try to explain to Bill that you grew up with Roger Moore. He stole Shaw. The debate for Bill Berman is really who's number two. That's the debate, because everybody
Connery's
believes
one.
Connery's.
Connery is one. Most have Daniel Craig. Let's bring in the tiebreaker. He is, of course, a Hall of Fame bookmaker, Vinny Maliulo from the South Point. We were having a James Bond discussion. Look, I know Roger Moore isn't the best. He's who I grew up with. So there's familiarity there, Vinny. You are the tiebreaker. Who's the best Bond?
Ward Bond.
Ward Bond. Now, the answer. Let's hear it.
Ward Bond, the great actor from the 1940s and 1950s. How do you leave? James Bond. I'm sorry. Sean Connery.
Who's number two?
I would have to say that Roger Moore, number two. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Very good.
That's it.
Very good.
Yeah.
Vinny, thank you for joining us. And that is in reaction to the fact that Michael does not watch these games with volume. So oftentimes, maybe we got to give him an iPad like Tom Brady, and we'll have him set up with his little James Bond marathon while the games are on in front of him. Last night, you and I were discussing during the break was disgusting. However, as a bookmaker, you don't really care about the aesthetics. You care about whether you won or lost. Where'd you close? Where was everybody betting? And did you win some money last night?
Well, listen, guys, you know, 6 weeks ago we were screaming, hey, when is football going to get here? It's here. Although some people would argue that that was not necessarily football last night. I know that players, I mean, NFL players, I guess, don't particularly care for the Thursday night game, although they do benefit on the back end of it, right, because they'll get a week and a half off. But I also think, and Michael has oftentimes spoken of this, that, you know, NFL players, professional athletes are creatures of habit, and they probably would prefer to go week to week. But from our perspective, a Thursday night game is good. It's good for business. You hope it plays out a little bit better to help the in-game, and it didn't, you know, last night's game did not necessarily do a tremendous amount of business in-game. We did close the game 3.5, Broncos 3.5 and 42. They bet it under quite a bit, which, I mean, that cashed. It was a pretty good two-way action overall. It wasn't a monster decision last night. But aesthetically, we don't really get involved too much with the aesthetics. If it's an exciting game, it's a high-scoring game, and a back-and-forth game with high scoring, then, yes, there's more in-game. But as far as the game itself and the halftime, business was good.
You know, Vinny, I'm with you. Look, I'm tired of these people complaining, well, it was a bad game. Look, it's football. It's Thursday night. I stayed awake for the whole thing. It was great. I enjoyed it. It wasn't well played or well coached, but it was what we want. We want football. I'm shocked that people weren't continually betting the under in that game, because I'm not sure if we would have gone to the hockey, because I'm big into hockey now, Vinny. I don't know if you know this, but just hypothetically say you would have gone to the defense would have just played like a, what do they call that in hockey, where the penalty, they take one defender off the field, right? So, you know, say that one of the defenses would have taken one guy off the field, I don't think the other offensive would have scored anyway. Like, there would have been no goals.
Do you, Patrick? Wait, let's play a little game. Let's play a game. Michael, do you know what the halftime spread it was as far as the total, the over-under at halftime? And Vinny,
I'll tell you what I had.
Okay. I had it at 20. A couple of books were 20.5. What was the South Point at halftime as far as the total?
We used 1.5 and 20.5. Mm-hmm.
20.5. So, Michael, to your point, you know, if you watch that first half as an apt evaluator like you are, you're hammering the under 20 and a half.
I don't tweet during games because I just kind of get bored. I don't want to do it. I don't want to talk, you know, like I kind of got fed up and I tweeted a couple times on coaching malpractice because I just got tired of screaming at Frank Wright for not helping that poor kid out at left tackle. I'm like, are you kidding me? You know, at some point, are we going to do something? I mean, I said this to somebody last night via text. I said, if Al Davis was the owner of the Colts, Frank Wright would have been fired at the end of the game and taken a Southwest flight home because there's no chance that would – I mean, he would have gone berserk. You think I was going nuts? Oh, my God. So, like, I would have just kept there. I don't – that, to me, was a no-brainer. And then whatever the second half over under total, I would have kept hitting that. I would have just – Vinny, I would have banged it out.
Well, that's why we book the games. That's why they play the games and the halves, and that's why we book them. So,
yeah.
I mean, it was the under did cash last night in both the game and the second half, and certainly
and here's,
the first half.
And so
did sweep the board last night in terms of the total. The bettors did.
I'm not a great over under predictor before the game. I can sense it in the game. But what bothered me about that game the most was the fact that I said on yesterday's show, Vinny, that our man Russell Wilson had practiced against that style of defense his whole career. And that if he wasn't making plays against that defense, then when was he ever going to make plays? Like there was always a sense there had to be confidence in him to execute, and he never could.
Yeah, I think one of the surprises that we're seeing so far from our side, I mean, listen, you know, the defense has played well last night, but that also, I think, was partially due to some poor offenses, right? Denver's defense has been solid. My biggest surprise has been the performance of Russell Wilson this year. I thought that he would be better suited in that offense. I think a lot of people did. You know, five games in, we're not really seeing the Russell Wilson that we thought we would see. That said, you've still got, you know, that division that's going to be pretty competitive. Although the Chiefs, and if they make a statement on Monday night, they're gonna start to really take hold of things there. So we thought, you know, going in, it was going to be the number one rated from a power rating standpoint division. It still is towards the top because of the competitiveness of it. Amongst the league, but it's certainly not playing out in this first quarter of the season to what we thought it would be. And I think a lot of that's got to do with the Broncos. There were a lot of folks back in the Broncos, remember, in futures. I'm talking about, for the conference, for the division, and the Super Bowl. Well, that's kind of waned. Now, there's a long way to go. We'll see what happens, but I don't see the Chiefs slowing things down at all.
I would agree with that. Yeah, I would too. And we just kicked off week five. Let's take a macro look from behind the book. Dogs are cashing big time. Unders are cashing big time. Does that mean that you're taking Scrooge McDuck-like swan dives into money there at the South Point? Or because of the sophistication of the general bettor, it's not necessarily what one would suspect with all these dogs and unders cashing there, Ben?
Yeah, good question, Patrick. You know, you going in the last week, right? What unders at about a 65% clip? There's a few things. Now, have we adjusted totals? Let's start with them. Have we adjusted totals down a bit? Yes, but not as dramatically as some may think, because again, there are still folks out there that do like to root for points, and they do bet the over. So, again, it's adjustments are made based not only on the performance of teams and the final scores, but also based on how people bet the events, right? How people bet the games. So there's that. Listen, there's no question, and we've talked about it, particularly in the last 5 years since VSiN has come on the scene and educating people. People are making much more educated decisions now, and people realize that in order to make money during the course of a season, over the long run, there are times when you've got to do two things, and that is bet underdogs and to bet unders in terms of totals. You've got to pick your spots, and you've still got to hit them, obviously. From our side of the counter, there was always this school of thought that we always were rooting for underdogs. That's not the case because, again, it's about balance. Do all games get balanced action? No. Probably 10% at the most get balanced action. What do you hope to do with those other 90%? Well, go, you know, split them. So from our perspective, the best results are where we get a pretty even ratio or a balanced ratio of dogs and favorites coming in. Last week, you know, listen, there was that mix, but the public got there because they had the right combinations, particularly in their multi-leg bets. Those being the parlays last week is where people cashed and they did well. So even though it was kind of balanced last week, the balance was in favor of the public, and that has to happen sometimes. So for operators out there, frankly, you know what? The public's going to cash sometime, and that's okay because in the long run, that creates more business.
Yeah, you like when the customers are titillated.
Yeah, titillated. Yeah, that's exactly the word that
what I'm saying is you like right to hand out a little. Hey, it's Halloween coming up. You like to hand out a little piece of candy so they come back and they give you more candy. Is that fair?
That's right. Yeah, it's a. Okay. It's a listen, look at the market. If us bookmakers don't stimulate the economy, you think we can't rely on the federal government to do it? Come on.
Thank God for you. Thank God for Vinny. Thank God for you, Vinny. God for the crew. Vincenzo and the crew, Chris Andrews, and of course, the whole crew there at the South Point. Okay, so this is interesting. Let's come back with this. The South Point released their games of the year in college football last spring. Four of those games are being played this weekend. Let's compare the numbers. That's next here on the Lombardi Line.
Listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Okay, VSiN pros are making money. You should too. Become one. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe. So again, you're going to pay $175, but you get everything we offer, the kitchen sink through the Super Bowl. That includes our Pro Tools. You get the splits as part of the Pro Tools, the Pro Picks. So every time we have a guest or a host makes a pick, it's archived every single day throughout the day, and you get email alerts. Pro Tips, which you get two a show, so over 20 a day, all archived. And I'm telling you, those that have signed up are very happy. VSiN.com/subscribe. You can do it now. We welcome you back here on the Lombardi Line. He's Michael Lombardi. I'm Patrick Maher. We're joined in his weekly spot by Hall of Fame bookmaker Vinny Maliulo there at the South Point. You mentioned going into break that, you know, you had these games of the year in spring where you dropped a bunch of college games that are marquee matchups. Interestingly enough, four of those games of the year are being played this week. Let's have some fun, run through the games that are being played, what the number was in the spring, and where we sit now, Vinny.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? And again, it's a terrific exercise. Back in May, and we've done this here at the South Point for the last 4 or 5 years. It's a lot of fun. You know, and let's remember, it's a very early look at numbers because it's a really early look at our power ratings, right? So, and in the last couple of years, what's added to I guess you could call it a challenge is the transfer portal, right? Where there's still players moving around and things like that. So we back in May here at the South Point, Chris Andrews, Jimmy Vaccaro, and I we put some numbers together, and these are folks. And the great thing is, you know, Chris will put it out on social media. We're going to make this announcement. We talk about it. I come in here and talk about it on VSiN and let people know. And the majority of these, the betting that comes in on these are professional players, very respected players. And you really want to welcome that as well, because those are respected opinions and you're creating business and interest very early on. So last May, I'll go in rotation number order here. This week, Auburn and Georgia, where Georgia is holding steady this week as a 30-point favorite against Auburn. Back in May, no love for Auburn then or now. Georgia from 16 to 17 and through 17, like 17.5. So there's a game that's almost doubled in terms of the point spread. Now, of course, it's not just the way they're bet. Obviously, we're looking at You know, we're third away or a little bit more than a third away, 45% of the way into the college season right now. So you've got those performances to look at there. So the next one is the infamous Red River rivalry between Texas and Oklahoma. And that game this year is playing it early this year. I wish it was a little bit later here on the West Coast, 9 o'clock a.m. Pacific time, where Texas opened this one, not too much of a not as big a move. Texas did open this week at 6.5, and is now sitting as a 9-point favorite. Last spring, Texas opened as an 8-point favorite and moved down to 6. Support for Oklahoma last spring, money for Texas this week here at the South Point. Texas A&M and Alabama, and this one had all that drama. Remember last summer and the back and forth between Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher. Where are they at today? 24, holding steady. Alabama, even with the injuries, holding steady as 3.5 touchdown favorites. Yes, 3.5. It's hard to believe. And you know, there were a lot of folks high on Texas A&M coming into the season. 13 last May, up to 14, and then that's when we started to see a little bit of A&M money. That game we got back down to 3. It was pretty good two-way action, 13.5, 14 back last May, but now Alabama as a 24-point favorite. And then a game that's here in Las Vegas and will probably be a sellout. I think we've gotten a lot of requests, the hosts here at South Point and throughout the city, requests for this game. Between BYU and Notre Dame, great start too, 4:30. That game now support showing this week for BYU. Notre Dame opened as a 4.5-point favorite. They're now sitting as a 3.5-point favorite today for that game tomorrow evening. Notre Dame opened as a 9-point favorite last May. We're bet up to 10, and then the game, that's when we started to see.
Wow.
Some BYU money, and it came back down to 8. So two-way action overall then, but you could see a significant change. So it's kind of interesting. We get a lot of questions. I thought that with four of those big-name schools, some of those marquee games, we had them as games of the year. Folks often like to compare what they were last spring and where they are this week.
So Bama.
How about that, Michael? Bama 13 in the spring. They're now sitting 24 with A&M and your boy Jimbo in town.
Well, I mean, look, genuflect when you say his name, please. I mean, you're talking about a legend offensively. I mean, come on now, please. We get the Stations of the Cross going here. They can't move the ball. And now the question is, the shocking to me is that number's at 24.5, and we're still not sure Bryce Young's going to play, right? We don't think he is. And
I don't
if they
think
go
he's
with
play.
Milt. Yeah, if they go with the other kid, Milbray or something like that, with the kid that, I mean, really athletic, can run hard, but not much of a passer. So they're going to have to change their offense around a lot to handle that. So and that surprises me why this line, to me, I can't imagine that Alabama can score at a rapid race with Jalen Milroe in there as opposed to, you know, Bryce Young and how they handle all that. Now, look, they ran the ball effectively against Arkansas. Arkansas' weakness was in their secondary. Arkansas was pretty good up front, but they didn't tackle well in that game. You know, and Milroy took off and ran. He was spied on. He ran for a first down. I think this has kind of gotten the other side of it. I think this A&M being so bad, Jimbo taking the heat, I think this line's kind of gotten away, to me at least, especially with the backup quarterback, if he plays.
It's really well put. Because Milroe, who's not much of a passer, he's a great runner, he's a big kid, looks like he's going to be starting here for Bryce Young. I want to ask you, Vinny, if that plays into the number, because the one thing Texas A&M can do is defend. So they are tremendous defensively. They're a dumpster fire offensively. You can't say it, but we do. And they've lost their best wide receiver as well, A&M. So long-winded way of saying, do you have a different number with Young or Milroe as far as under center for Bama?
I think it's just anti-A&M with the way they've performed.
That's fair.
Frankly.
I
although,
think so.
To Michael's point, I also think that this is This is a huge game for Jimbo Fisher. I mean, let's face it now. This is what his, I think, at least his fourth, probably, I think it's, it might be his fifth year there. These are all his recruits, right? And everything that went on before the season, between him and Nick Saban, I mean, this, you know, they've been a disappointment to a lot of folks, particularly their fans so far this year. That said, you know, I think a lot of folks are also waiting for the official announcement. Personally, we don't think that Young is going to play this week, but this is there's a more anti A&M support and sentiment, and that's why you're seeing this number really kind of holding steady. But it is a big number. There's no question about it. 24.5 is a big number.
That's the thing about the college board, different than the pro board. Vinny set this number as if the backup was going to play. Because in pro football, there's always, you know, you to be determined who's making the call. Now, they set numbers, but clearly when there's this much of a decline, you know, we saw it with Green Bay. We saw it in a lot of games. You know, the line moves tremendously in another direction. And so, like, I'm shocked that it's at 24.5, knowing that the backup's going to play. That's what surprises me.
Yeah, the other thing, guys, too, is that when you look at Alabama, right, they just wear you down as well. And with you know, to Michael's point and your point, Patrick, about A&M not scoring a lot of points, as the game progresses, this Bama team we've seen, you know, they just grind. And, you know, with or without Young, that may be the case here. So, but I do think that there may be some support for A&M, and certainly not to win the game. I don't see a lot of money line action coming in on A&M in this one, but you may see some support with the number.
So Red River was the one you and the bettors got closest, right? Because you ended up kind of getting bet down to 6 in the spring, and right now you open this week Texas 6.5. However, it's up to 9, correct?
Yeah, it's up to 9 here, and I think, you know, I think, I mean, so it's a neutral site, you know, and Oklahoma, I think there's just, Texas is a healthier team as well, talking about injuries, right guys? So I think this is, again, people watch, and a lot of folks that are out there, professional bettors know what the number was when we had the games of the year. Some of them that are invested. Now they're taking a stand as well. But, yeah, this one was closer. But, again, went going opposite ends of the ladder from spring to now fall.
You're the best, Vinny. Thank you.
We don't know about Dylan Gabriel playing, right?
That's it. That's the concussion. We'll find out. We're going to go out to Oklahoma and talk to Chris Plank next.
You're listening to The Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Okay, puck drops in Prague to kick off the NHL season. Michael's going to stay up for it. All 32 teams are previewed in our prep guide. He's fired up, man.
Why don't I read those?
Nobody cycles the puck better than Michael Lombardi. Best bets for player awards, rookies to watch. I would ask you your favorite rookie this year, but we don't have a ton of time, so I'll get back to you on that. VSiN.com/subscribe for more. All kidding aside, the NHL season guide is awesome for new bettors, can help you understand how to bet the sport. VSiN.com/subscribe. Okay, let's go Red River and bring in Chris Plank. Nobody's better when talking Oklahoma football. Sooners Radio Network, Fox Sports Radio, SiriusXM. As a matter of fact, Chris Plank is going to be on ESPNU. That's 84 on your SiriusXM dial, 6 to 8 before the Red River rivalry tomorrow with Texas and Oklahoma. As I say hi to Chris, of course, Michael Lombardi there, on Patrick Maher. We've worked together for years, but we've never had a chance to speak, Chris. So welcome and thank you for doing this. We have to start here. Dylan Gabriel, will he or won't he?
Yeah, and Patrick, it's an honor, dude. I'm one of your biggest fans. And Michael Lombardi, I listen to the GM Shuffle. I'm a diehard Raider fan, and I'm ready to watch your boy have that offense clicking on Monday night. So
now I'm going to ask you
out of the way. Let's go. As I talk to you, Patrick, I'm actually crossing the Red River. So I apologize.
Perfect.
I would have loved to have had a more stable connection, but we got to get down to the Cotton Bowl to figure out the great question. What quarterbacks start, right? I don't know the last time. I've covered Oklahoma since 1999, but more specifically as their sideline reporter since 2011. So I've never seen a situation like this. It's been 2014 since we've gone into a game where Oklahoma has a question about who's their starting quarterback based on injury, and it's a concussion, so it's even more concerning. I also don't remember the time whenever Texas went in and both teams didn't know who their starting quarterback was, though the report is out there that it's going to be Quinn Ewers, we shall see. It's a great unknown. I don't have a good answer for you, except to say when the line moved yesterday, I don't think you're going to see a line move that significantly on Quinn Ewers starting for Texas. So that said something to me. The good news is that he has been at practice, right? He's been there. He hasn't been, you know, kept out of the light. He hasn't been, you know, kept away from practice. So, you know, not fully understanding what the collegiate concussion protocol might look like, Patrick, I would say the sign that he is at least out there at practice would be a good one, but it's not the most positive outlook from those around the program right now that he'll be able to go.
And how about Dylan Gabriel? Where is he health-wise?
Yeah, and then that's the whole thing, Mike. It's like, what are we going through? You know, what are we going through here in this concussion protocol, right? He never left the hospital. Or pardon me, he never left the TCU game to go to the hospital last week, right? That's a good sign. You know, Damon Harmon, who was down later in the game, they did, and they both were able to travel back home. But, you know, Oklahoma is on the cutting edge of concussion protocols and treatment, right? Their legendary athletic trainer who just retired last year, Scott Anderson, kind of helped to write the protocol. So, you know, it's the unanswered. And we're really worried as Oklahoma peeps if he can't go, what that offense might look like. But if he can't, Brent Venables did tell us on Tuesday, three different quarterbacks, you know, would be taking reps this week. Not just Davis Bevel, who looked lost last week when he came in. General Booty, the JUCO transfer with the greatest name in college football, but also kind of ballyhooed, exciting freshman Nick Evers. So they've got some guys that are trying to show they can do it, but they need Dylan Gabriel. And, you know, I don't think I've ever seen a concussion be a game-time decision, but I don't think we'll know until game time who's going to go.
Chris Plank joining us does a great job. Okay, so let's be fair about what happened with Oklahoma last week against TCU. 55-24 probably isn't indicative of how badly they got beat by TCU. That was after a loss to Kansas State. Chris, nobody knows this program better than you. Where are they right now after the two losses? And give us a feel on Venables.
Yeah, and I'm live, Patrick, live crossing the Red River as we speak. So I don't know if this is the first time in these in history we are crossing over from Oklahoma to Texas live on the air. And look, there's the adult video store like it always is. All right. I wish I was making that up. So if I would have, on my local show, which talks Oklahoma Sooner football 24/7, 365, if I would have told someone after that performance against Nebraska, or if I would have went in with the take of they're going to be double-digit underdogs to Texas in a couple of weeks, might have been fired, right? They might have had me checked out. It's the most unexplainable turn I've seen. Now, some would say it's a simple turn. They finally play decent teams. Fair enough, right? And we all know Nebraska isn't good, even though Kent State was somewhat competitive with Georgia and UTEP beat Boise State. You didn't play Alabama, you know, Tennessee and Notre Dame for 3 weeks. You played some pushovers. So I don't know what's happened, Patrick, because it's a mix of everything. It's offensive ineptness. You know, Dylan Gabriel, before he got hurt, was incredibly erratic. He was missing throws that he had typically been making. And then defensively, I mean, the big charge this week has been they need to simplify the defense. Well, I'm not an X and O guy, but a corner busting a coverage on cover three is about as simple as it comes. So it's a very frustrating time because you have this faction. I'm not comparing it to Scott Frost, but you have this fan base so badly wants to see Brent Venables succeed like the Nebraska fans wanted Scott Frost. They so badly want to shove it in Lincoln Riley's face that you can win here, and they so badly want to be able to say, see, Caleb Williams, you left something special. That after 3 weeks to be where you are now, it's been a big gut punch for this program. But I'll say this. They this coaching staff is grinding. They don't feel like it's time to start playing their young guys and see what they have for the next couple of years. You know, they'll go out and they'll work to try to fix it. But it is very, very much a – it's an uneasy time in the Sooner Nation whenever it just seemed like it was so perfect after the first three games. I mean, Patrick, they were talking 14 playoffs after the first three games. And now we're sitting here hoping for a bowl bid. It's the most unexplainable thing that I've seen covering this team in almost 20 years.
But Chris, they went through so many transfers. I mean, the program kind of really got the cart got turned over, really, you know, in terms of losing all the players that lost. You know, they have draftable players. They lose players in the portal. I kind of think it's hard for this all to come together in just four games.
Michael, will you please come on my local show and explain that to Twitter fans, please? Please, I beg of you. You're right, and I think part of the problem is how they started. I think how they started was, you know, really encouraging beyond it probably should have been, right? I would also add this. Brent Venables has been pretty open about what you're saying. You know, Oklahoma isn't building something to win the Big 12. Oklahoma is building something to win national championships and compete with Alabama and Georgia. So, you know, I don't want to get too carried away here, but he came in and said, we've got to do everything different. He's like, this isn't how it should be. This isn't how the facility should be set up. This isn't how our schedule should be. This isn't how anything. We've got to start over. And for a lot of people, players included, you're looking like, we were 10-2. You know, we went to the playoffs four straight years, four times in 5 years, or 3 or 4 years, whatever it was. We won six straight Big 12 titles. What do you mean we have to do things different? What do you mean, Brent Venables, this brand new South End Zone facility we just built, it's not good enough, and we need to do, you know, $175 million in renovations? So you also have that group, which has understood, okay, we're putting our faith in Brent Venables and his right-hand and left-hand guys, and we're going to believe that's the change that needs to happen. But now, those people who are in charge of, you know, raising the funds and those who are giving the money, Michael, suddenly they look at it and they're like, whoa, okay, are we sure this is the right way? Are we sure this is the way that it's going to go? It's unfortunate how knee-jerky it's been, because there is a rather large group that understands there's a lot of work to do. There's a large group that looks at it and says, hey, we were pretty close to being a 6-win football team last year. This wasn't necessarily a team that was blowing teams out on its way to the Alamo Bowl. So it's a really, really good point. And I think there's a group of people that are understanding it and embracing it. It's been kind of how much of a challenge this might be to turn around.
You cut out just for a second, Chris Plank. Okay, 30 seconds. Four straight for Oklahoma in the rivalry. They're catching 9, Chris. You know gambling. Is 9 too much here? What are you doing with this number?
You know what happened, Patrick? I crossed it to Texas. Not as good of cell service as there is in Oklahoma.
That's facts.
Okay. I've said it all week long. In this rivalry game, weird stuff happens. So, you know, to me, 9 is way too many in this game for either side. So I would take Oklahoma with the points. I might even wait to see if Dylan Gabriel gets ruled out, to see if it gets shot up a little bit too. So, yeah, I'm taking Oklahoma all the way, Patrick, and I appreciate you guys having me on.
Drive safely.
Thank
Chris
you so
Plank.
Much.
SiriusXM tomorrow morning, 6 to 8 on ESPNU 84. He's a really good host. He does a great job. We appreciate the time. We continue. It's the Lombardi Line.
Listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Okay, we welcome you back. And of course, BetMGM has you covered. Wager at BetMGM Sports and you can earn points like your credit card. Visit BetMGM.com or download the app. Again, you get points. You can use those points for free bets, for hotels, dining, shopping, anything you can do at a BetMGM resort. It's the best loyalty program in the game. So check it out, betmgm.com, or download the app. 1-800-GAMBLER if you have an issue, got to be 21 years or older. Okay, Red Rivalry, of course, we're going to be here tomorrow. on the Lombardi Line, a Saturday college football. Chris Plank joined us, who does a great job. And really what he came away with it, and he wasn't being a homer because he talked about all the pressure on the program and Venables right now. By the way, listening to him talk about boosters and the pressure on Venables, no thank you as far as taking that job. What a pain in the ass every single day for some of these college coaches. But one thing he did say is nine is way too much. He likes the nine in Oklahoma.
I agree. I think Venables is a good coach. I think, you know, obviously last week got away from him, but, you know, that's going to happen. But look, this is a program that he took over that had I think what he said there was really important, that this wasn't like Lincoln Riley was giving him a Mercedes or a Rolls Royce. Like, there were a problem. Every time Lincoln Riley went against a good program, he got punched in the mouth. He didn't win the Big 12 last year. You know, I mean, so he almost like he did a, you know, he did an Andy Dufresne. I mean, he escaped to USC. It wasn't like, you know, oh my gosh. So, like, let's just be real honest here. Like, that program wasn't perfectly set for his for moving forward. Now, to me, this is a game that I don't care. Chris is right. No matter what the situations or the score, it always comes back to this is an important game. It's a border game. Those always are important. These kids played against each other in high school. They know each other. And if Gabriel can play, we know the other kid for Texas is definitely going to play. Quinn Ewers, he's going to play. And so we'll see. I think Oklahoma, you know, when you look at Oklahoma, the problem is they've done a good job on third down. They've done a horrible job in playing red zone defense.
Chris also got a plug for GM Shuffle. Just want to let you know quickly, GM Shuffle, the new one is up. Go to VSiN.com, Michael Lombardi and Femi. Also, if you want some college football information, our college football podcast is right there when you go to VSiN.com and the Pro Football Podcast. Those are the big three, so make sure you go check them out right now. I was talking to Steven about this during the break. We've got plenty of college football coming up tomorrow. And that is, you know, I still got TBD on Cooper Rush. My assumption is he's playing in Los Angeles this weekend. Is that your assumption as well?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Jerry talks like he is. I didn't get the sense that he's not. I mean, I didn't hear that he wasn't, or I don't pay attention much to the injury reports because they kind of can be very misleading. So I usually just on Saturday, I kind of like who practiced on Friday and who didn't. That's a pretty good indication. You know, if a guy like right. Mac Jones, I saw a clip on Twitter. He's throwing on Friday. Here's the other thing. The Patriots haven't brought anybody up to the roster yet. They put Brian Hoyer down on IR, so they haven't brought anybody up. So that tells me that, you know, that they think he's going to play. I mean, the moves usually determine what's going to happen. You know, like the move, like Denver bringing Murray in from New Orleans. They obviously knew, you know, they were going to lose it back. They had to get one. There's the move, so you know what's going on there. Whereas the Patriots really haven't made a move. Now, they brought Garrett Gilbert to the practice squad, but I'm not sure that that's really going to be something that they go through with.
And we've got Dak did not practice both Wednesday and Thursday. Don't have a Friday report. Again, there's no reason not to.
I mean,
if there's any questions, what Rush has done, there was no reason to play Dak early. So he did not practice.
Not.
Okay, so he did not practice today.
I mean, look, let's be real clear here. This Ram team is not the Ram team that we watched from last year. You know, yes, Stafford's throwing a lot of interceptions. He's throwing more this year than he even did last year. He led the league at 17. You know, he's on pace to throw more this year. They can't run the ball at all. I mean, this Ram team cannot run the ball. And so if you're Mike McCarthy and you're saying, okay, we have good matchups in this game now. We have really good matchups in this game. We can control the line of scrimmage. We can put pressure on Stafford. Maybe we won't be able to take Cooper Rush out, but they have a hard time making explosive plays down the field. And they're going to have a hard time blocking us. And we're going to probably have a hard time moving the ball consistently on them. I think this will be a tight game. So why would you risk that? I mean, we have a hard time, I do specifically too, of removing ourselves from last year. Like, this is not the same team last year that they were. They're not. The Rams just are not. They're not the same team in terms of their explosiveness offensively, and they're not the same team in terms of their playmaking on defense. They're not playing to the same level that they have to play. And it shows up in their numbers. I mean, look, they're 29th in points scored. They're 28th in yards gained offensively. They're 29th in turnovers. They're 29th in rushing yards per attempt. They're 31st in rushing attempts. Don't even try to run the ball. They don't even try to run the ball. So you have to be really careful about it. You know, and they scored 31 against Atlanta, but they're not an explosive team.
Also, the disease of Moore, as Riley called it, mm-hmm. where you get some success and then all of a sudden other interests start to come. It's real. Like, you don't repeat in the NFL. Like, there is a level of, I don't know if it's satisfaction. And of course, nobody in the locker room or McVay is going to say this, but again, it's legit. I mean, this team it looks almost lackadaisical. It's weird watching them play. And Stafford, you talked about that screen, that pick he threw to the screen, Michael, he just wasn't reading the defense correctly.
It was just throwing it. It was like he's back at that. You've seen that throw 1,000 times at Detroit. You know, just, okay, I'm throwing it, you know. And look, the fact they can't even get any kind of a running game going. I mean, the Arizona game, they gained 100 yards rushing, right? And so, but now let's put this in perspective, right? So they've turned the ball over 9 times in 3 games, right? They've turned the ball over 9 times in
sloppy.
They've forced 7 turnovers, 4 in the first game, right? 4 in the first game. But they haven't forced a turnover since the Arizona game. They got none in that game. So they can't run the ball. They can't get control of the line of scrimmage. And they've kind of gotten away. This is interesting. Somebody asked a question on GM Shuffle, and it was a really good question. Is, do the Rams have an identity? And the answer is no longer. With Goff, they did, right? With Goff, they were a hard play action. We got to run the ball. We got Gurley. We're going to run it. We got to set up. It's all play action. Now they've lured themselves into the Stafford trap, where we're just going to let him wing it around the lot and see what he can do. And now all of a sudden their interception percentage goes up, their margin for error goes up, and it exposes the one thing they hid since Sean McVay's been there, is the offensive line. He has hid that offensive line since the day he walked in there. He's hid them through a play-action pass scheme. Now he can't hide them anymore because he wants to run dropback with Matt Stafford. So it's a little bit of here and there. I thought Will Hill made the best statement of all. I mean, look, they won the Super Bowl. They deserve it. They won it. But they were they might be one of the worst Super Bowl teams we've seen in a while in terms of their overall team and how well they played. They got lucky not playing Buffalo. They got lucky not playing Kansas City. Really, they did. And they're an interception drop away from even playing in that game.
San Francisco in the NFC Championship game. And by the way, their best pass protector was on the Amazon broadcast last night. Andrew Whitworth.
No doubt. No doubt. So the line is not good, right? They signed Allen Robinson. They can't seem to fit what they're doing, you know. And so Stafford's they're back to being this. They're back to being the Lions, really. No disrespect, but they're back to being the Lions. All pass, put the ball in Stafford's hands, and they're going to turn it over.
Yeah. No offense.
That happens, though. That happens quite a bit. Like, okay, let's go back to Indy. Right, when they traded for Matt Ryan, my thought was they're going to run the similar Shanahan offense with Matt Ryan that he was good at. Bootlegs, nakeds, get him out there, move him a little bit around, right? They're not. They're running the Phillip Rivers offense where he's a statue back there. And then they can't run the ball. And so now everybody, and me included, we pile up on Matt Ryan, but the offense that I visualized they were going to run, they're not even running.
Before we say goodbye on this Friday, a friend texted me to ask you, do you think there's drama between Kyle and Jimmy in San Francisco?
I think there has to be a little bit of resentment. Like, yo, bro, you didn't fight for me. I've won so many games for you. You didn't fight for me. And I think what adds flavor to this, you don't look at Twitter on this, but what adds flavor to this is you replaced me with him. Like, seriously? Like, that's who you think is better than me? Like, okay, it's like, you know, your girlfriend leaves you for another guy and then you find out he's 20 pounds overweight and he doesn't brush his teeth. Like, you left me for that? Like, seriously?
It came back to Bumble. All right.
Yeah.
You and I are going to be here.
I think there's an inherent, it has to be. There has to be that.
We're going to be here early for college football on the Lombardi line. Looking forward to it.
And Sunday, we're going to be here early too.
You and Berman tonight. It's called From Russia with Love. It's Connery at his best.
We're going to Ocean City High School with Love. That's where we're going.
Okay.
Well, Ocean City
it's
game.
All love. It's all love, bro. Well, have a great Friday, Michael. I'll see you early tomorrow morning.
Thank you, Patrick.
Okay, Big Bets is coming up next with Dave and Amal. We'll see you tomorrow morning here on the Lombardi Line.